The Pittsburgh Penguins were already rolling along, and now they've got a generational talent back. Evgeny Malkin comes back into the lineup, Sean. 2 goals, 1 assist, 4-1 win against the Anaheim Ducks. Ho-hum, he's back. I mean, look at this team right now. They're climbing. They're right there. They're not only just top four in the Metro, Sean. They're playing like the best.
Yeah, they're top five, I think, in Super 16 this week for me, which comes out tomorrow. Like, you look at this team. I mean, they had their winning streak snapped with kind of a late meltdown last week, but against Dallas. But they're really, really good, and they're really deep. They might be as deep as they were when they won back-to-back cups. Like, and it's because so many guys have been injured. They've had players flourish and now can kind of play back where they belong. So you're talking about a really good third line, talking about a really good fourth line. I don't think their defense gets enough credit for what it is. You know, maybe they add a piece there at some point. And Jarry's been really good, but you bring Malkin back and he plays in game one like that. Like Sullivan kept saying, we're going to wait. Malkin has to be ready. We have the luxury of waiting. Well, he was ready when he came back.
Yeah. I mean, he looked like he never left, to be honest with you. And he had the surgery June 4th. And we had Mike Sullivan, obviously, on last week. This week, we're going to have an interview coming up here with Derek Stepan from the Carolina Hurricanes. So we're going to stay within the Metropolitan Division. But to get back to your point, Sean, I mean, depth, right? Let's look at it. Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Jeff Carter, Brian Boyle, Teddy Bluger. They go five deep down the middle. They can play Carter on the wing if they want. Evan Rodriguez can play the middle too if they want. They're at that position, which to me is, you know, obviously the most important forward position. It might be the most important position. I don't know if you can argue it's more important than D or goalie, but it's such an important, vitally important position. They go so deep down the middle there. They can toy around with that at all. And one of the things that I found hilarious as the week leading up to this return from Malkin Tuesday night, we're recording this Wednesday, was, is he going to disrupt the chemistry of a team that's rolling? And I'm looking at it and I'm going, he's Evgeny Malkin. Like, he's a Hall of Fame player who still is at the top of his skill level and has a lot to prove after being out for so long. There was no question in my mind about chemistry disruption and all that. The players around him were going to be like, this is Evgeny Malkin coming back into the lineup. We've got to work with this. It's not going to work against us. It's going to work for us. And you look at it, it's just one game, but man, he looked good. They have been terrific of late. They're climbing in the standings and now he's back. I don't know what slows him down unless it's injuries or COVID.
Yeah. And look, I've come to the realization and I've love the fans. They tune into the podcast. They support NHL.com, but literally they can find anything to complain about. They can find the black cloud hiding behind the Allegheny Mountains that's going to come over. Like, they just, oh my God. Like, sure, there's players on the Penguins who are going to play lesser roles now. They're professional hockey players. They understand this. They want to win. Jenny Malkin gives them the best chance to win. And it's also not like they went out. It's not like Brian Burke went out and Hextall and said, you know what? We're not good enough. We're going to go trade for somebody. And we're going to bring somebody in new. And we're going to get rid of other players to do it because we don't feel like we're good enough. This is their guy. He's just coming back. He's part of their team. They all have experience with him. They all know who he is. They knew he was coming back. So it's not like it's a shock and all of a sudden you drop a new guy in the room and you're like, okay, boys, figure it out.
No, he's their guy. Yeah, it's interesting. I was talking with Dave Barr, who does Coach's Room for us on NHL.com, and I work with him for his Coach's Room. And he was talking about Malkin and the return, and that story is up now. But one of the things that Dave Barr, who was a former, you know, longtime assistant coach in the NHL, now coaching in Austria, was saying was how he was just marveling at no matter who Pittsburgh brings in, it might take a little time early in the season, but they integrate these guys. They're pros. They play like pros. They figure out their roles. Obviously that is, you know, a testament to the coaching that Mike Sullivan does there in Pittsburgh. But, you know, guys like Evan Rodriguez or a Brian Boyle or a Teddy Bluger, or, you know, you can go on down the list, right, of guys that just Mike Mathis, like guys that fit roles that are given to them, and they flourish in them. And that is, that's why they've been on top or close to being on top for so long, and why they remain there when, you know, idiots like me question them at the start of the season and don't pick them to make the playoffs.
I guess the rebuild's over, but it is. And I thought the Dave Barr column was amazing, right? Cause you look around the league and same thing with Kucherov.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he comes back and doesn't miss a beat. Just brilliant. Like, you thought maybe the hands would be a little bit behind, right? And maybe the legs would be a little bit behind. The mind always works, but nothing was behind. Like, he just came back and he picked up right where he left off, and he makes that Tampa team a completely different team as well, right? And now the next big one, and I think maybe the most interesting one, is going to be Eichel.
Yeah.
Right. In Vegas, he skated for the first time yesterday with the Golden Knights, and 2 months after his disc replacement surgery, and no timeline for when he comes back. But you look at that team and you wonder where he's going to fit, and you wonder how they're going to have to reshape their roster to make it work financially. And to me, that one is a little different. Because there are guys that are going to look around and say, he wasn't part of our plan, and now everything's changed, and now my role's changed. That one's going to be a little harder. But I think the one thing that Pete DeBoer has that he shares with Mike Sullivan and with John Cooper is he communicates. Like, that's what a player wants. Like, this is how things are going to change. This is how we're going to win. And this is how I see what you're going to do. And you will have opportunities again, because hockey's a fluid game and people get hurt. And I know what you can do. But the expectations are going to be laid out for everybody on that team when Jack Eichel comes back.
But you know what also those three teams have in common, the teams that Dave Barr wrote about in Coach's Room, the ones you just brought up, Pittsburgh, Tampa, and Vegas, they're all built so well. They have the luxury of letting Evgeny Malkin have a pseudo training camp, of letting Nikita Kucherov come back from his injury on his timeline. Jack Eichel the same way, right? I mean, they're built well, they're successful teams, they're good. They find roles for guys to fill in those roles. You know, in Pittsburgh, maybe it's, it's Evan Rodriguez, right? Who has stepped up. In Vegas, it's Chandler Stephenson, who leads them in scoring with 36 points, who has stepped up. You know, in Tampa, they also lost Braden Point, but Steven Stamkos is having a terrific season. He's healthy. He's having a great year. And then you look at guys like Corey Perry have stepped up. Pierre-Édouard Bellemare have stepped up. Matthew Joseph, Pat Maroon. You know, it's the systems. It's the culture. It's what they do well that they can allow Kucherov, Eichel, Malkin, star players to slowly work themselves back in so they don't have to rush them. So they're not out of sync or out of shape when they come back in, that they're ready to go when they come back in. And Vegas is going to do that with Jack Eichel, you know, and Pete DeBoer brought that up. He said, this is a nice step and it's an important step, but you got to temper your enthusiasm because it could be a month before we see him on the ice with this team.
Yeah. But I will argue that it is different. He has no institutional memory with this team. There's no alliances. Besides on the ice, he's going to have to navigate a dressing room that's pretty tight. And to me, it's a little bit more difficult. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying it's a little more difficult than coming back from an injury. On top of the injury, everything's going to be new for him.
Absolutely. That's why skating with them now, you know, for the, you know, if it is a month, 3 weeks, a month, skating with them now is very helpful. And, you know, we were all wondering when Jack was going to arrive in Las Vegas. He's finally there. But I also think, and this was brought up as we talk about this Eichel situation, Dave Barr brought this up in his Coach's Room story, a guy like Chandler Stephenson, who's having a terrific year, a career year for Stephenson, already set a career high in points, 36 points in 38 games. He leads them in scoring. He's been the center, their top center, when healthy, Pacioretty and Stone are his wingers. If they want to put Eichel in that spot, a guy like Chandler Stephenson understands that his role can still stay very important, even if he's on a third line, right? Because he's won the Stanley Cup as a fourth line center. He knows how important that role is. He can still play on the power play. He can still play on the penalty kill. His 5-on-5 minutes would get cut if that's where they put Eichel, because clearly it makes the most sense talent-wise and skill-wise to put Jack Eichel between Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone. Is that going to work? We don't know, but they're going to have some time here too to figure it out, even when Jack comes back, because they're in a good position, you know, in the standings. But a guy like Chandler Stephenson, if you're going to have to move somebody around, at least you're moving around a guy who's won the Stanley Cup as a fourth liner and understands how important that role remains on a team that has aspirations to win the cup.
Yeah, and that's why you get players like Chandler Stephenson, because they have that chameleon ability and they have the proper mindset. So, look, we're a ways off. A lot is going to happen between now and when Jack Eichel says he can play. You know, we're looking at 3 weeks to a month. There's a lot of hockey that's going to be played in that period, especially as we, you know, we try and catch up. But to me, it's going to be one of the most interesting stories down the stretch of the season. There's high expectations for that Vegas team. I mean, every year they sell the farm, so to speak, to try and win. They've never been shy about going all in. You know, Lehner, Stone, every guy that they've gone out and got, Petrangelo, like, there's no shortage of bravado of, hey, we can win the cup, and now this is the latest one, and how are they going to put all those pieces together?
Yeah, and if you look at it too, right, when they get Jack Eichel back, I mean, look, the lineup everybody looks at and says, oh, this could be it. We don't know, because injuries, COVID could impact that, obviously. But if everyone is healthy, everybody that they have now can't be on that team. Somebody's going to have to go, just simply, you know, to make the cap work. So that's also going to be a fascinating thing. But I wanted to get back to Kucherov and that return with the Lightning. And then looking at the standings, Sean, you know, looking at this Sunshine State rivalry, which really became a rivalry in the playoffs last year, because they actually finally played in the playoffs and Tampa won in six games. You look at it right now, as we speak, Wednesday afternoon, Florida and Tampa atop the division, 53 points each. Now, Tampa's played two more games. They have a 697 points percentage. Florida's got a 736 points percentage. Watching both teams play last night, Florida dominated the game 5-2 against Vancouver. Obviously, you know, Tampa dominated Buffalo 6-1. These two teams might be the best two teams in the National Hockey League, and they're both in the state of Florida. And look, I mean, Toronto's right there too. But, you know, that 2-3 matchup, I mean, if that's Toronto's in the 2-3 matchup again in the playoffs, I feel for them, because you got Florida and Tampa, but this could be you could still have a Florida-Tampa 2-3 matchup. I mean, it's so fascinating to see that these two teams, as good as they are and answering all the questions, you know, the expectations were high for both, obviously, and they look like they're at the top of the league.
You know, if you ask me, as good as Tampa Bay's been recently, I think Florida is the better team right now, right? I don't know if that's going to be at the end, but, you know, Bobrovsky's been playing well. They'll outscore anybody, right? 142 goals in 36 games. There's nobody in the division, including Tampa Bay, who's close. Tampa Bay has 128, and they've played two more games. Like, Florida can just put the puck in the net, right? And Jonathan Huberdeau should be in everybody's MVP conversation. The fact that he's not going to be is a travesty. I mean, he's just playing lights out. He's really kind of bringing that team to a truly elite level, in my opinion. So, you know, they play better defense than they have in the past. I think they learned a ton from Tampa Bay last year. I think in that six game series, they learned that there's a different level when you get to the playoffs, and every team has to learn that. And, you know, Florida didn't have a ton of experience with it. They played the Islanders that 1 year in the playoffs, and there's still some guys left from that, but that team's turned over a lot. And I think it was really eye-opening. Like, here we are, we're playing the Stanley Cup champions, and who went on to be Stanley Cup champions again, and we're hanging with them and we're giving them problems. And then all of a sudden we're not. Right. Mm-hmm. And Tampa Bay found that extra gear and had that mental fortitude to kind of take the bad parts of that series and park them much faster than Florida did. And I think those are the lessons Florida's learned. And it's just the regular season, and you don't know what's going to happen. But I look at this Florida team, and, you know, it may be a mistake by me, but I think they're a better team than they were last year.
Well, I think they're a better team than they were last year. And Andrew Burnett, I think, deserves a lot of credit for, you know, that seamless transition after Joel Quenneville left to Andrew Brunette. But I'm not ready to say that they've learned a lot yet. I think they were a good team last year. They're a good team this year. They're very good. They may be better than they were last year. But, you know, you have to see it in the playoffs first. So that's the only reason I'm not ready to say that they've learned a lot yet. I would love to see another matchup in the playoffs between these two teams, between Tampa and Florida, because then you're really going to see what they learned. You know, like that's really going to be the testament. If it ends up being Florida, Toronto, which would be a great series, somebody's going to have to win. Neither one of these teams have won in a playoff round forever, right? So that would be good too, because one of those teams is going to get out. But I would love to see it as Florida, Tampa, just simply because then you really get the point of view of what did they learn. Right now, they look like world beaters. They look great. I mean, especially at home, they're 19-3 at home. Most home wins in the league. Huberto, like you said, is having a terrific season. He's got 47 points. And Sergei Bobrovsky has been terrific this year. A 919 save percentage, a 255 goals against. The goalie that's been better has been Vasilevsky. So there's that too. But I got to see it in the playoffs. I still can't say that they are a better team right now, even with what I've seen, than Tampa, just simply because I have the institutional knowledge from Tampa.
Yeah, and that's understandable and probably correct. I'm just an eternal optimist. You know that about me, Dan. But I will say, and this is going to lead into our interview, which is coming up in a minute with Derek Stepan of the Carolina Hurricanes, that little corner of the South, right, that we've always talked about, Southern hockey, my God, they could be four of the best teams in the league. And you got Nashville, you got Carolina, you have the two Florida teams, right? Nashville played Colorado last night, Tuesday night. Sign me up right now for seven games like that. Four times Colorado came back from a goal down, tied the game. Cale Makar scored another goal. He's on a pace that nobody's seen in modern hockey for a defenseman in scoring. You know, they didn't have Landeskog, but it was one of the most entertaining games I've seen so far this regular season. And it really is a testament to kind of the growth of the game. And you're going to see it in the stadium series when Tampa Bay plays Nashville. And that's going to be a true testament to how hockey's grown in the South. But literally four of the top six best teams in the league are in that little triangle of the deep South of the United States.
Yeah, that Nashville-Colorado game, you're right, sign me up. I mean, that was just, it was a good night of hockey Tuesday night. And that was just a terrific game all the way through. I know there was controversy at the end. Was it a too many men on the ice penalty or not? But you know what? These things are going to happen. Those, you know, and you don't like the break you got, go kill the penalty. They didn't. Matt Duchene's been playing really, really well. UC Saros has got the most wins in the league right now. You know, he's been terrific. That is a team. Before, just quickly, before we get to the Derek Stepan interview, Sean, that is a team in Nashville. We've talked about them in previous weeks on this. You know, they are way better right now than I thought they were going to be. And I do think, they've taken on a lot of the personality of their coach in John Hines. He's a good coach. He's serious. He's to the point. There's no, you know, soft parts of him. There's no, what is he thinking? You're not questioning. He's right there to the point. And I'm watching this team play and they are going at it. They're rolling lines. They're feisty. They're in the corners. They got a great defenseman playing in Yossi. They have really, of all the teams in the league, they may be the one that surprised me the most.
Yeah, I didn't expect this from them. And I'm always high on Nashville. I love the organization. I think they, you know, do really good things with players and stuff. But it seemed like they were kind of ripe to turn over for a couple of years and try and figure it out. And they've put it together really quickly. And now that they're where they are, right, now you have to start watching David Poile. Because he's a guy that's never been shy about pushing chips into the middle, right? He's done it so many times. Forsberg. You just think about it. Like, he is never the guy who's like, I don't know. Maybe this isn't our year. Like, if he even gets a sniff that this could be his year, it would be wild at the trade deadline if there's something available that he likes.
He's got to be careful, though, because this team plays with great chemistry, too.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're together. This is a good group. All right. Anyway, we teased it enough. So here is our interview with Carolina Hurricanes center Derek Stepan. Derek, thanks so much for jumping on with us. So I'll get you started right away here. Carolina Hurricanes, why is this team as good as it is? Give me the veteran point of view.
Oh, boy. Well, I think it's a combination of things. Obviously, I don't think you just you get good overnight. I think there's been a lot of building to this point over the years. I think the organization has done a good job with draft picks and building from, you know, from the inside internally a little bit. And so it goes years back, but specifically this year, I just think we've had good chemistry as a group, and we've found ways, you know, we found all the ways to win. And you know, anytime you talk about a team that's having success, you got to talk about special teams, and our special teams have been good. So you give yourself a fair chance, and obviously you don't go anywhere without a goaltender, and Freddie's been phenomenal.
You know, we talk a lot when we talk about good teams or even bad teams that they take on the personality of their coach. And I'm wondering with Carolina, how much of that team and the things that you talked about, the attention to detail, special teams, chemistry, all originate from Rod, who was just named coach of the NHL All-Star game for your division when that comes around. How much of it is a direct correlation to what Rod preaches and acts on?
Yeah, it's a huge chunk. I mean, he, from the moment I've gotten here, he's able to squeeze every ounce out of every single player. And that's what makes an elite coach, is to be able to get every single guy hitting on all cylinders. And it is definitely a trickle down effect with him. I mean, he gets you to play the game and compete hard, and he's able to, you know, have your back and also be able to push you. And all those qualities are the reason why he's going to be coaching the Metro.
Did you know him well before you got there? Did you know, his style or anything like that?
No, I didn't know a whole lot. I've heard unbelievable things about him, and had a conversation with him in July, and I came down here pretty early, so I got to know him before training camp a little bit more too. So, no, not a whole lot of prior to that.
Derek, your role has changed a little bit, obviously, with this team. It's a little bit more of a support role than it may have been in the past. And again, you know, you talk about Rod getting the best out of every player and finding those spots for him. What has the transition been like for you as you kind of settle into a very kind of a specific role with this team?
Yeah, I think for me, when going back to July and picking a spot to play, it was very important to me to go into a spot and maybe be in this type of role where, you know, more of a support, and I wanted to be able to help a team maybe get over the hump per se. So I've really liked the role. I've really enjoyed it. I've been kind of, you know, able to just play the game and you know, learn from this group that has got it figured out. So it's a unique spot for me, and I'm really enjoying it.
I'm trying to figure out, because I go back with you to when you started in New York, and I'm trying to figure out, when did Derek Stepan become the sage old veteran, right? Like,
I know.
At what point was young. That? Yeah, I know.
You know, it's funny. It happened this summer, because up to this point I was fine, and then this summer it's like now all of a sudden I'm old. I don't know who decides that. I think it's the media. I'm gonna blame you guys. How about that?
Well, it's also your situation, right? Like in Carolina, you look at the top end talent on this team; they're young. Yeah. Like and as a player that's been around the league for a while and been around some good players, it has to be invigorating to kind of see, you know, those top end guys, the Ahos, Svechnikovs, you know, be so young and so supremely talented.
Yeah, I mean that's a, you know, wrapping back to one of your earlier questions. I mean, that's a big part of why this group is off to such a good start, is their young talent is continuing to work, continue to get better, and it's been a lot of fun. And you know, I want to make sure that it's noted that I am the fifth oldest guy on the team. So I'm not even in the top three. So so the record is clear, I'm number five on the list.
All right. We got you. Yeah. You're young, man. You're still 31 years old, right? You know,
couldn't agree more.
But you mentioned something that was interesting. You said to learn from some of these young guys and to learn from a team that's had it together now for a while. That's another thing you've been able to get since being there in Carolina. What have you learned? What can Derek Stepan learn from this team, this group of younger players?
I think one of the things is you always want to, everyone always is competitive and they want to win. And I think one of the things that I've learned from this group so far, the entire group, not the young guys, the entire group, is that they're just consistent at how they go about their business. And not that I, you know, I've obviously played long enough, not that long, remember, fifth guys up. You learn what it's like to be a pro, and you learn how to win consistently, and to see it done at a young age, it's really special. And then you talk about some of the talented things that these guys can do within practice, and you have fun with that. And you know, it's just, you got to constantly be learning. You got to constantly be, you know, adjusting. Otherwise, you won't be able to kick it around very much longer.
As you're learning, the most important thing, has Svetch taught you how to do the lacrosse goal yet, the Michigan?
No, he hasn't. I probably should get on him about it. But every time he's behind the net in practice, I yell, pick it up. No matter where I'm at on the ice, I yell. It's dumb to pick it up on a stick. But no, I mean, they're just – it's cool to see how talented, you know, really how much the game has come along. You know, you look around the league and how young talent is coming up. It seems to just continue to grow.
One of those guys, obviously, is Sebastian Aho. And, you know, as a center, what has impressed you being on this side now with him?
Well, lots, but I joke with him that he's my favorite player in the National Hockey League. And that's not me. That's me being completely honest with him, that he is right now my favorite player to watch. I think one thing that I didn't really know about him, I obviously knew he was talented, but I didn't realize how fast he was playing against him. He really is. He really can scoot around the ice, and he's a competitive kid. He wants to win. He's a great leader. So yeah, it's, you know, it's fun to watch.
It's early, but have you know, you've obviously had success. Have you started to look around and look at your division and your conference and kind of take stock of what you're going to face in the playoffs? I mean, it's your division's loaded with the Rangers and the Capitals, and now Pittsburgh's coming out of nowhere and Malkin's back. And then across the bracket, you know, you have Florida and Tampa Bay. I mean, it's a real meat grinder.
Oh yeah. I mean, I think early on in the season, we were kind of just in the grind and we were playing. And then with everything kind of slowing down, you kind of take a look, and it's just a weird time right now. There's a lot of teams that haven't played a whole lot. There's teams that are still going. So it's hard to really look at the standings and understand where the points are going to go and games that need to be made up. But if you just watch the games, you're 100% right. I mean, and listen, you got to play all the good teams to win, you know, and it doesn't matter if you play them in the first round or in the third round. You got to beat all the good teams to get to the final game. And we got a tough test, but that's a little bit further down the road here. We got to finish up this season the right way and put ourselves in a good spot.
Yeah. And you mentioned that the stops and starts and whatnot through the course of this season, which is, you know, so much different. And we had Mike Sullivan on last week, and he said this is the hardest one of the COVID type seasons because of those stops and starts. You know, in 1920, it was just a stop, you know, and then last season it was a shortened season. And this one is trying to get through an 82 game season with all those stops and starts. You guys are creatures of habit. So how has that impacted you? And how much of a discussion point is it in the locker room too? And, you know, when you guys are in the room and, oh my God, we're on like our fifth practice in a row now without playing, you know, like how much are you guys talking about that?
Oh, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, it's really out of our control. You have to just come to the rink and present each day as it is. So day by day process. And I know that that's kind of a cliche answer, but really that's kind of where we're at. And, you know, obviously we've had a ton of practice the last few weeks. You get wore down doing the practices, but you have to understand that this is work for you today. This is the only thing you got. The good news is we get to get play a game tomorrow and we go from there. And it's just, and that's kind of how we've, you know, gone about it, is, hey, one at a time here, and let's see what happens next. But, you know, obviously, we've had a weird schedule, and it's been hard. There's no doubt about it that it's not easy getting games canceled. I mean, it feels like we've had like three mini training camps in the last month or so.
It's like playing junior hockey again, right? You practice all week and then
college
and everything on
practice weekends. All week and Friday, Saturday game back at the practice.
Coming from Minnesota and obviously starting your career in New York, like, you've been around some really good hockey markets. What's taken you by surprise or been pleasantly surprising, I guess, about Carolina and its personality as a hockey market.
Yeah, I honestly, like, I really believe that, you know, when you start to win hockey games, people will be in the buildings. And I think, like I said, I'm going back to, you know, there's a couple of years in the building here of this group that they've started to win, and the fan base has been phenomenal. I mean, I love driving into the rink and people are tailgating out front like that. And that is cool. I mean, that's something that is unique to this market. And I got no complaints. It's been a lot of fun.
Have you stopped for barbecue on the way in?
Not yet. Maybe one day. We'll see.
Oh, you got to get the barbecue there. That's one of the staples down there. You couldn't drive into Madison Square Garden, but when you got there as a Ranger, you knew you had a goaltender who was lights out good. Henrik Lundqvist is going to get his jersey number retired by the Rangers. You played a lot of games with him. So I wanted to ask you about him. Why? There's so many reasons. I understand that. But why, in your mind, did Henrik Lundqvist become who he became in New York? What was it about him? What one or two things stood out to you as you played with him and against him in practice?
Competitiveness and drive are big ones in Hank. He taught me so much about, you know, just coming to the rink and just ready to compete each night. And, you know, obviously talent aside, you're an amazing goaltender as well, but those things are really what, you know, I learned from Hank is, you know, his practice habits. And I mean, I don't know how many times you watch Zouk and him take, you know, he probably took 35 breakaways from Zuccarello after practice in some days. You know, I see that's pretty special. And, you know, he was just driven to win. He just wanted to win. That was the whole point of his process. And that was cool.
There's a lot of athletes that are driven to win, and it's obvious from the minute you meet them. They're really intense. They, you know, in the heat of the moment, they throw things, they scream, they yell. And we look at that and we're like, oh, he wants to win so bad, it hurts. Like, on the outside, Hank was a little different in that he never seemed to lose his cool, raise his voice, and was still as competitive as you talked about. Is that an accurate interpretation of who he was, or was he something else behind closed doors?
No, that's pretty accurate. I mean, listen, anyone slams their stick or does, I mean, that's all of the guys in the league, I feel like, at some point get to that point. But that's very accurate. I think Hank, you take everything that he had to deal with, as well as being our best player on every single night. He had to handle a lot, and it was part of what made Hank so special is he handled it with ease, and he was able to keep his calm and keep his cool. And listen, there's definitely moments when you play with a team, you're going to have moments where the guys are get frustrated. That's normal for everybody. I feel like Hank was no different in that aspect. If he needed to be a leader, he was easy to do it for him. He stepped up, he said his piece or slammed his stick and got the message across and moved on. That's what Hank did. I mean, I played a lot of guys that did that. So, yeah, Hank was good about staying cool. And that's in game, when you have a goalie that's calm and collective behind the net, and, you know, if a puck goes in, he's able to just go right back to the next shift and make a big save. And that's how you have success. And that's what Hank did for my years there.
And I know it's a different position, obviously, but I wonder, from what you just described, have you taken some of that as you've moved on and been able to, and, you know, in a leadership role, incorporate some of what you saw from what you were just talking about with Hank?
Yeah, I think I try to learn from everybody I play with, regardless if you're playing your first one or they're playing, you know, game 900. I think you can always learn from guys, and Hank was no different. I took a lot of his leadership qualities and how he carried himself with me, because I thought I was really impressed with how he did it. And to be our best player on top of all that on any given night, most nights, I'd probably say 90% of the nights where Hank was the number one star at MSG. That's special. And to be able to say I got to play with someone like that is pretty cool.
Do you take any fashion tips from Hank?
I should have. should I have ever. But I at the time in New York, I was doing the old, like, I still have hair fake thing where it's not. And I think the one piece of advice that Hank kept pushing is just like, step. Like, come on, let's get rid of it. But no, I was never able to. He should have taken me under his wing because I dress awful. I have just terrible style. But none of that for me.
That's right. You're a Midwestern guy, right? You know.
Yeah. You're welcome on our podcast anytime. We're not fashion horses either.
Yeah. I mean, my wife is slowly implementing nicer outfits and nicer clothes in my wardrobe. But we're at practice day today, and if you can see the bottom half, it's what we like to call it the sweatpants sweatshirt combo.
Hey man, there's nothing wrong with that. You got to be comfortable, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If you're comfortable, you're good. But I will say, and I want to stress it again before we let you go, you got to stop for the barbecue. I mean, I don't know what kind of food.
Okay, I missed. I've had barbecue down here. I thought you were saying on the tailgating. For barbecue.
No, I wanted to know if you stopped at the tailgate, heard a little "Rock You Like a Hurricane," had some barbecue, and then went into the rink.
No, we've had barbecue, but I have not stopped to tailgate to eat the barbecue. I've had barbecue since I've been down here.
That'd be a little weird if a player was to stop at one of the tailgates, but I guess it would be a good story if you did it, though.
Maybe you'll see me on Twitter next week, and I'm at Dan Rosen.
Oh, that's pretty good. Derek, man, thanks so much for jumping on with us, giving us a few minutes. Really appreciate it, all right?
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, good luck with the rest of the season, man.
All right, we'll see you.
Good stuff there from Derek Stepan, Sean. That's a good team. He's a nice, quiet leader for that team. I like that addition that they made there with Stepan. Talk about a quiet leader. How about Nicholas Lidstrom? Never, you know, perfect human, terrific player, Hall of Famer. He is back in the National Hockey League, of course, with the Detroit Red Wings, of course, with Steve Yzerman, the vice president of hockey operations now for the Red Wings, named to that position on Tuesday. I think it's wonderful that Nick Lidstrom is A, back in the NHL, B, back in Detroit. But I think this guy, he can add so much to what Steve Yzerman is already putting in place there in Detroit. I like that, you know, former players, when they go back to the teams that they became real Hall of Famers with, you see Joe Sakic with Colorado is another, you know, is an example of that. And they're smart and they're understanding and they're patient and they know what, you know, you have an understanding. They're not, you know, fly by the seat of their pants guys. They weren't as players. They're not going to be as executive. Yzerman is not that way. Sakic isn't with Colorado. I expect Lidstrom to be the same.
Oh, of course. And part of it is, they bleed those colors, right? Like it's not like another guy, and you never question anybody that has a job of that level. They're clearly committed, but there's no institutional memory, right? You go and you as an executive, you sign with a team, like that's your team until it's not your team. Like for Nick Lidstrom, the Detroit Red Wings are his team. Mm-hmm. No matter what happens, no matter how it shakes out, like that's who he will identify with for as long as he's involved in hockey. So there's a different level there, I think, for players like that. And then, you know, you just talk about the institutional memory that he has. And I thought the two most interesting things to me is, one, he's going to stay in Sweden for the most part. You know, his family kind of dictates that. That was the way he was going to get back into the game, was if he had that opportunity. And two, you know, Yzerman said he's going to be valuable everywhere. Whether it's player development, whether it's player evaluation, whether it's trades, whether it's whatever it is, he is not going to be put in a box. Like, to me, that's one of the things that I think so many executives are guilty of. Like, you're the cap guy. Mm-hmm. You can't come into player development. You can't come into player evaluation. We have people that do that. The more voices that deserve to be at the table, that are put at the table, make things much better for a team. And Steve Yzerman has shown throughout his managerial career that he is not intimidated by having other smart people at the table. And I think that's one of the reasons why he's been so successful.
You think about how valuable Nick Lidstrom could be for the Red Wings coaching staff. Who better to ask about, you know, playing in the National Hockey League, playing defense in the NHL, you know, on the power play or the PK, who better to ask than the guy who was one of the best ever to do it, right? Now he's available to them. And paying very close attention to. He might have been available to them before he worked for the team, but how close of attention was he paying? Now it's his job to pay close to it. Who, if you're in player development, who better to ask than a guy who is as critical of a thinker and analyzing the game and players as this guy, right? I mean, it's really just it's such a smart addition by a smart general manager. I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's Steve Eiserman knows what he's doing. He knows who he wants to work with. And he's able to convince these guys to come on board with him. It's Detroit. Lidstrom's got a great history there. And the staying in Sweden part, I mean, that just speaks to where we are today as a, you know, in technology and the ability to do these things, because honestly, you may not be there live in person to see everything, but he doesn't have to be live in person to do his job for the Red Wings. I'm sure he will be at times, but he doesn't have to be all the time. There's a lot of players to go watch in Europe that Nick Lidstrom can easily get to go see and talk to that are already within the Red Wings system. And then it's so simple now with technology to be able to do it from his home in Sweden. When I understand his parent, you know, his that's where he lives. His kids are there and his wife wants to stay there.
Yeah. And let's not forget, they got a pretty good defenseman that they need to mold in Moritz mm-hmm. Seider. Like, he's going to be integral and kind of as that goes forward. And again, like, you know, that's all great. And Stevie doesn't speak that much. He had to speak yesterday because, you know, he made this big hire and obviously they wanted to promote it. So it was a rare Steve Eiserman sighting as far as speaking to the media. He kind of keeps things close to his vest. So there was a lot to glean from that. And I thought the most amazing thing was, look, Detroit's been better than I thought they were going to be. You know, their big guns have played pretty well, Larkin and Bertuzzi, and then they have the rookies coming up behind them and Seider and, you know, the forwards and Raymond and those guys. But Steve Eiserman, man, talk about tamping down expectations. We're not going to do anything to accelerate this timeline. We know what we're doing and we're going to stick with it. Like, if you're in Detroit, you're starting to get excited, right? Like, hey, these guys are coming faster than I thought. We got three guys that could be rookie of the year, the three most important positions, one each. And then we got these other guys that we've been building up for 5, 6, 7 years. We're right around where the Bruins are, played a few more games than they did, but we're right on the edge of the race. Like, maybe we can finally get in the playoffs. And Steve Eiserman's like, nope. If we do, we're going to do it with what we have, because I'm not mm-hmm. selling.
Well, think about how Eiserman's history, right? They fast-tracked a little bit just by the way the team played under Guy Boucher in Tampa. They end up in the Eastern Conference Final against the Boston Bruins way earlier than anybody thought they were going to be. But that wasn't the team that Steve Eiserman was building, right? I mean, that wasn't it. So then they had a 3-4 years where it was lean in Tampa, a couple of years there where it was lean in Tampa, and Marty St. Louis gets traded and, you know, Vinny LeCavalier gets bought out and whatnot. And the leadership turns over. So that's not happening here in Detroit. They're not going to make a run to the Eastern Conference Final. You know, all of a sudden, I don't think they will. I mean, look, I didn't think that Montreal would make a run to the Stanley Cup Final last year, but so it could happen, I guess. But patience has worked for him. It really has, when he's set his mind to it and done the due diligence of it. So for him, there's absolutely no benefit at all for Steve Eiserman to come out and say, we really like the position we're in right now. We're going to push this, that, and the other. Zero benefit of that, because you fast track it, you lose guys. And that can be a bit of a problem. Whereas if you just take the slow, methodical approach, and what did Ken Holland do? I mean, how many times when Eiserman was there as a player that they just let guys marinate in the AHL for a very long time, so they were super ready for the NHL, right? I mean, like, there's a history there. There's patience. He knows there's no benefit to coming out and saying, you know, real great things about a team that has been surprisingly pretty good this season. It's a slow, methodical approach. And if you're a Red Wings fan, I don't think you're bent out of shape by that, because now you have guys who you trust leading the way right now. And there's got to be, if I was a Red Wings fan, I'd have a lot of trust in Steve Eiserman and now Nick Lidstrom. Look at all they've done for me.
Yeah, no, for sure. And look, I want to talk a little bit about Ken Holland and his new job, but first I want to say that, yeah, they let guys sit in the AHL. Ken Holland let guys sit in the AHL because he had an all-star roster. There was no salary cap. Like, he put
you could do it.
He put $100 million rosters on the ice, and you could let a guy sit in the AHL for 5 years and say, you're not ready yet. And when you come up, you'll be ready. That was a luxury that he had.
Well, they did win the Stanley Cup in 08 and get back to the cup final in 09. That's in a cap era, so I got to give him credit for that.
But it was not at the cap era we're at now.
Well, it was lower. But anyway, I see your point. I get your point.
So, but now Kenny Holland is in Edmonton. Edmonton has fallen
like
out of the race. Out of the race, like 2-9-2 in their last 13 games. So they went from having the best points percentage in the league on December 2nd to not being in the playoffs on January 11th. It's been ugly, ugly, ugly. Goaltending's been a problem. Everything's been a problem. Special teams have been a problem. So Kenny spoke yesterday. Kenny Holland spoke yesterday with the Edmonton media because he hadn't spoken in a while. And, you know, obviously Dave Tippett was in the hot seat. Dave Tippett is not in Kenny Holland's hot seat. Kenny Holland has never fired a coach in 25 years of being a general manager, which to me is just unbelievable. But he said, we can win with Dave Tippett. I have full faith in him. We're going to turn this around. And then he said that he's not sure that trading assets to help McDavid and Draisaitl is the way for this team to go. Now, to me, the Edmonton Oilers are in a different place than the Detroit Red Wings. Sure. You're Steve Yzerman. You got two really young kids that are foundational players and a couple that are really good but are not in the Draisaitl McDavid category in Larkin and Bertuzzi. In Edmonton, Draisaitl's what, 26 now? Right? And McDavid's 25. Like, these are prime years. And it's getting away from you again. And you're gonna hold on to your first round pick because you're not sure it's gonna help you. I don't know if you have that luxury anymore.
I don't think you do. I don't think you do. I think you, if you continue to show patience as a general manager, as an executive in the NHL, if you can continue to show patience when the players you want to win with are in their prime, and that's what these two guys are, you know, and you can say Darnell Nurse is in that mix too, right? Then they're going to be out of their prime and you're not going to win. It goes fast. Like it does. Seasons fly, right? And I'm not saying that McDavid or Draisaitl are going to be out of their prime anytime soon, or Darnell Nurse. They're not going to be out of their prime anytime soon. But you got to strike when you can. And the Oilers can. You know, like they have obvious issues. One, goaltending. It's an obvious issue. Okay, we know that. There's an ability there to help yourself this season at goal in net. There are goalies out there for that. You know, you can do that and make trades and make it work. The other issue I think that they have that I've noticed from watching them play is they got a lot of guys, and we talked about this last week, I believe, they got a lot of guys who stand around and watch Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. You need the right guy to come in there and say, stop watching, start playing. You can find that guy, you know? So you have to give up a first-round pick to do it. What do you think Connor McDavid wants? What do you think Leon Draisaitl wants? Do they want the Edmonton Oilers making a first round pick in this year would be what, July? Or do they want the Edmonton Oilers playing meaningful hockey in June? Your first round pick's not going to help you play meaningful hockey in June this year. It's not going to help you for meaningful hockey in June next year, and probably not the year after that either. But you can make a trade. You could move it to get a guy or two, a couple of assets, move some picks, move some prospects to get guys that will help you play hockey in June this year and next year maybe too. And that's where Ken Holland has to be thinking. So I was shocked to hear him taking a patient approach there. I don't mind the Dave Tippett stuff. I think Dave Tippett's a good coach, you know, but this team has obvious issues that you can solve. Go out and solve them.
I think they go deeper than that. I don't think you have enough draft capital or prospect capital to solve all the issues this team has. So you're kind of putting a band-aid on it. But one person that Ken Holland did talk about a little bit and who's been in the news as a possible addition, possible help, but going so far as to say that he spoke to his agent, is Evander Kane, who had his contract terminated by the NHL. And there's all kinds of legal fights that remain as far as that goes. But, you know, there's rumors out there that there's a couple of teams left. Who knows? By the time you listen to this, he might have already signed somewhere. But Ken Holland said, I spoke to his agent. This is something I need to explore. I do believe in second chances. You know, he's a goal scorer. He's a guy that's not going to watch. He's got that big personality. He thinks he can do things. You know, he thinks he's the equal of other goal scorers. Is he a guy that if you're the Edmonton Oilers, you say, I'm going to hitch my wagon to this to try and fix this?
Well, I don't know that you say hitch the wagon, but I think he's a piece that can help you. And strictly from a hockey playing perspective, Evander Kane's an excellent hockey player. Like he's an impact difference making player that would be a secondary scorer in Edmonton. That would be a great addition. I mean, this is a guy who's got, you know, he's got 506 points in his career. He's played over 700 games. He's got over 500 points. He is an impact player. He's got over 250 goals. He's an impact player. There are other things to consider. I get that. But if you do your homework and you do your due diligence and you believe in second chances, and I do as well, even third chances, you know, I do as well. I think it can, you know, you can make it work. And it's absolutely worth it because, I mean, I don't think it's going to break the bank for you either. And you don't have to give up anything to get him. We're just talking about Edmonton needing to make trades, right? Needing to move assets to improve this season, to get guys who can really be a help to them. They don't have to move any asset if they want to go out and get Evander Kane or any team that's looking for that type of, you know, again, we don't know where he's going to go. It's down to a couple of teams we hear and whatnot. So this could be moot by the time you listen to this. He could be with Edmonton already, but I'm talking about any team in this position that needs guys who can score. And Evander Kane can score. Like he's a good hockey player and you want to be able to win. And I understand there's baggage and it's going to be controversial. It will be, but you just hope that, you know, he's at the right time. He's the right guy to make it work. And he believes in second chances that help as well.
Yeah. Well, I just think you have to take the empirical evidence and say, is this worth it? Isn't it worth it? And I think you just saw it play out. Different sport, different people. I'm not comparing the two of them, but the situations are very similar. And Antonio Brown, right? Like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers thought that they had a Super Bowl team and one guy got hurt and then they lost Antonio Brown because he didn't want to play anymore for whatever reason it might be. And now they're not the team that they thought they were. And they had some control over that. Like if something were to happen, you couldn't be surprised as a GM. So you really have to weigh the pros and cons.
Do you? Yes. And to go to the NFL, which you're talking about with Antonio Brown, I mean, obviously they have Tom Brady, right? I mean, they have leaders and guys who are understanding and can withstand that, you know, and a history, you know, they just won the Super Bowl. So they can withstand it. That would be a question I do have though, thinking about Edmonton, because they don't have that, you know, track record, so to speak. They don't have that. I do believe in Connor McDavid as a leader, but he's never proven it at the highest level yet. So that would be a concern. I understand. I didn't think of that analogy and it makes a lot of sense, but I'm not ready to say that Evander Kane is that either.
No, and neither am I. I'm just saying the bad, you have to extrapolate both ways, right? What's the best thing that can happen and what's the worst thing that can happen? And the worst thing kind of, for me, scares me a little more than the best thing, especially with an Edmonton team that hasn't handled adversity very well. So,
but you're also talking about the worst thing that can happen is it blowing up in your face as their season is blowing up in their face right now.
Yeah.
So you take the chance, in my estimation.
That's cool. Before we go, Dan, on a brighter note.
That's cool.
I'm not sure if we're going to gather together again before this happens next week. So I want to say congratulations to Willie O'Ree on having his number retired. It's going to happen next week with the Bruins. Number 22 is going to go up to the rafters with some other pretty special numbers in TD Bank Garden. What a TD great Garden. Honor. TD Garden. What a great honor for a great man. We both had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with him at NHL events all over the world. and, you know, pioneer. You can't say enough nice things about the man. He's not going to be there, unfortunately. Another thing that COVID has taken away from us, but he'll be in San Diego and he'll be partaking virtually. But to me, just such a great, great honor. And I'm glad the Bruins got around to doing it. Like, you can say, oh, well, you know, he didn't have a great NHL career. The NHL was a different place then, right? Like, just numbers wise, there's a lot of good players that never saw the NHL on a regular basis just because there weren't jobs like there are now. So, you know, we're Bill Douglas, our colleague, is doing a number of stories this week. One of the really interesting ones he did was talking to NHL players who played with Willie in the minors, in the Western Hockey League, all those places, and how good a player he was, how underrated he, how nobody understands what a good player he was. So it wasn't just, you know, oh, he was the first Black player to play. Like, he earned it. And for him to get these accolades now is awesome.
He is one of the few universally respected and loved people in hockey. Right. I mean, go around the sport, bring up his name. Somebody's going to tell you a story about how they met him and what he did for them. Right. There is not one person who's going to have any bad word to say about Willie O'Ree and what he has meant to the sport of hockey and what he, you know, what, you know, for years now, and the pioneer that he is. And it is, I'm so happy over the last, really, since I've been working at the National Hockey League, Sean. So this is going now back to 2007 and year before that, that it's great that really since then, Willie O'Ree has been celebrated and honored and promoted and everything he's done as a pioneer, but everything he's done for the league and for the sport in general since, you know, breaking barriers and all that stuff. So this is such a well-deserved honor from the Bruins. I'm happy it's happening. It stinks that Willie's not going to be there, but whether he's there in person or not, it doesn't matter. It doesn't take away from the honor.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. And if you find somebody that has bad things to say about Willie,
punch him in the face.
They're not worth listening to. I'm not violent like you, Dan. I'm just going to say that they're not worth listening to. You could go around punching people.
Well, I think we are worth listening to. And I'm hoping that people who listened enjoyed the podcast, enjoyed the interview with Derek Stepan. And if you got any questions, hit us up on Twitter at DRosenNHL, at @SRourke_NHL, at The Rink. Ask us some questions. We'll get to them on the next podcast. And until then, everyone stay safe and enjoy the hockey.